This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. And this week, we've got an action-packed episode. We're going to kick off with Pharaoh's War, starring Mike Tyson. Then we're going to go to Russia for The Russian Raid. Off to France for Sentinel with Olga Kurienko, and then we're going to end up with SAS Red Notice, the latest film on Sky Cinema. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Pharaoh's War. A man called Faroon puts together a team of expert fighters in order to raid a warlord's compound, where there is a hidden stash of $10 million. However, this is not the real reason for Faroon's mission. The warlord has kidnapped his son, and he will get him back at any cost. Okay, so we've got Mike Tyson and the guy who played the Mountain in Game of Thrones taking up the most of the cover of the DVD for this film.
Mm-hmm.
And you say it's pretty safe to assume, looking at the cover, go, oh, so one of these two guys must be called Pharaoh. And it turns out that it's actually a phonetic error. It's not Pharaoh in the film, it's Faroon, as we find out. So there's no Pharaoh at all. But obviously, hey, it's from Egypt. So yeah, Pharaoh makes sense.
Wait, isn't Faroon Egyptian for Pharaoh?
It may be, but even so. even though the film kicks off with Mike Tyson, his character, I can't remember even what his character's called in this.
Rick.
Oh, Rick, yeah. So Rick is a mercenary who's helping villagers try and escape a war zone. And unfortunately, the Mountain guy turns up and ruins his attempts, kidnaps this kid who we find out later is the son of Faroon, who was being sort of trafficked with his mother out of the area. It turns out that this woman and her son had been on the run from Faroon for many years, and he's sort of finally caught up with them. So at this point in the film, guys, Faroon isn't looking like the good guy very much. He's looking like the abusive husband who's sort of been stalking his ex-wife across various countries.
And he, if I'm right, was he not in prison for 4 years or something?
Possibly, yeah. that detail might have... No, I think you're right. I think he'd just got out of prison or something at some point, yeah.
And we're trying to find them.
Yeah. But so things aren't looking up at the start of the film. But then we get this nice, lengthy putting the team together sequence where we meet these sort of various people. You know, he's going from place to place, meeting people like the Argentinian and you know, the guy who's called, is he called the Rat or something? The guy with the crossbow?
Yeah.
Yeah, all this stuff, you know, there's a sort of various characters he sort of tracks down. There's a parkour guy who, you know, bears a passing resemblance to David Bell, and sort of various others. And you know, it's a great little sequence of events sort of leading up to, yeah, we're putting the team together kind of thing. You son of a bitch, I'm in. You know, that it's that kind of deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go over to Rich. How did you find this?
I liked it for the most part. I think, you know, when you see the cover, you think China Salesman 2, because it's Mike Tyson again and another guy. So we got the Mountain as Frank, who's the villain of the film. He and basically there's a prologue that introduces, as you were saying, that he's sort of trying to get them out of the country. Mike Tyson's leading them. Frank comes along. They have their little confrontation. And that is the prologue. That's the pre-title part of the film. And then you don't see Mike Tyson again for quite a long time. And you don't see the Mountain for quite a long time either. So, but these guys were previously both in Kickboxer Retaliation, but they didn't share the screen together. In that, I think, well, I might be wrong, maybe they did, but the Mountain was kind of like the big bad at the end of the movie in that, and Mike Tyson
was one of the, it was the guy in prison, wasn't he?
He was in prison. So he was in prison there, and he's in prison here, basically, in a different way. But yeah, so I Tyson was all right when he was there. I really liked the Mountain a lot. Frank, he was a good, formidable bad guy sort of operating this team. But the whole movie is essentially is the Egyptian characters. It's the Egyptian Expendables kind of thing that they're doing, going, you know, assembling the team, going on a mission. It's cribbing bits of different movies. Like you say, there's District 13 in there at the start. So there's a whole, there's like a market beatdown sequence at the beginning with the Argentinian. Then there's the parkour chase sequence, which is really good. And the whole film is packed with many, many action sequences. I mean, it's a 2 hour movie, probably hour and 40 minutes or something like that, hour and 45 minutes. But there's action through the whole thing. And I did like it for the most part. I was a bit confused at some points with somewhat what was going on, in part because the hero essentially misleads his team.
Yeah.
Which makes him hard to sympathize with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know this 10 million quid over there sort of thing. Really great.
Which is like wife supposedly buried on her own.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. In this person's the bad guy's compound sort of thing. Yeah. And you do get the impression that if he just told them what he wanted them to do, they'd have probably gone with him anyway. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the point.
He really didn't need to do it. Yeah.
It's like Expendables 2, because you know, in Expendables 2, they're avenging, I think it's Liam Hemsworth's death. Yep. And they go and they end up in this village where they're talking to the locals and stuff like that. It's exactly the same thing that happens here, except this time it's they go to Beirut.
Yeah.
I mean, go on, Steve. Sorry.
It's basically like Magnificent Seven in a way. You know, it gets the gang together, go to the compound, to the villages, say, look, you come back, we'll sort you out. And that's it. And then the last 45 minutes is just complete and utter total carnage. Where
but the good
everything's
sort.
Blown. Oh, yeah. Don't go. Yeah. It's, you know, I think there's more deaths in this than there is in Rambo 3. Rambo 4, sorry, should I say. There's that much explosions and, you know, people being shot. And yeah, it's like you say, he is a bit of a dick,
you know. Well, right at the bit that, you know, our introduction to him is him slapping his ex-missus around because he's trying to sort of escape him with his son, you know. It's like,
which I was worried was a feature of Egyptian movies.
Well,
because
I was
a lot of what we've
watched
this,
we did a whole episode a while ago about Egyptian films. We covered No Surrender, the one which had an extended cameo with Scott Atkins. There was The Cell and Detention Letter. And what we came away from there was that, there's a lot of good talent sort of behind the camera, but there is a sort of very questionable sort of sexism and misogynism sort of element to this sort of, you know, the narratives they come up with. And this one, again, you know, is this sort of very questionable thing about how he treats his ex at the start of the film. You know, he does settle down a bit, but mainly because there's no more women to slap around after a certain point in the film.
His other ex comes with them as well.
That's right, yeah.
The one that he jilted at the altar. So it's exactly. He's like,
yeah, he's a bit of a shit.
he is. But I mean, I must admit, I thought the Mountain was terrible in this. He's a formidable presence, but I just thought his acting was awful. I really did. When you look at him and he's speaking, he speaks out of his left side of his mouth. It's like he's had a stroke.
I wonder if he did or something. I mean, there's a lot of guys who do that. I mean, like Sylvester Stallone that talk out of the side of the mouth. But you do, and I think he's got some sort of not a stroke, but there's some sort of nerve not working or something, which is why he.
Well, I wasn't sure if that was a that was a choice within his performance or that.
No, I think he's probably just been told to just sort of read his lines and stuff. But yeah, he's not an actor, is he? He's a
presence.
Yeah. It's like when they hire wrestlers and whatever to be the Nathan Joneses of the world and stuff. They sometimes get taken into foreign language movies. They're not worried about the delivery. Because the local audience is not, attuned to the English language as the primary language, so they're not that worried. So, and plus, this guy's from Iceland as well, so he's Icelandic, speaking English in an Egyptian movie. So
let's talk about the dialogue in this film. Action-wise, this is actually really well done. Apart from that whole fight sequence with the Argentinian at the beginning, where it was cut so heavily, it was like a punch, cut, block, cut, kick, cut. It was like one movement and then cut to to another angle, which was.
And that very self-conscious music with the melodramatic punctuation stings and wailing guitar.
I think the main thing that's going to be holding this film back is the dubbing.
Yeah. It's a shame. I was hoping it would be subtitled.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. It'd be nice if they release a subtitle track with original language track with subtitles. But the dubbing, it's like we're back in the 70s. Well, no, it's like we're back in early Jackie Chan era VHS. Yeah. That's the standard of dubbing here. We've seen other films like this.
No Surrender was dubbed, wasn't it?
That was dubbed. There's one I covered on my other site called Heroes Never Die from the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They're all dubbed in a very sort of similar way, sort of very, I don't know, it's sort of, the emotion's not there, the emotion for the scene. And it's like, I wish they'd kept the original language for everyone except the Mountain and Mike Tyson, and dubbed those guys into Egyptian. That would have probably worked better. Mm-hmm. But Mike Tyson, he's trying, he really is. But listen to me, we just stay on the ground and we'll be fine. Terrible impression.
What happened with Ip Man 3? Was he dubbed in that?
I can't remember, to be quite honest.
No, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. I was just curious.
I think he's gaining steam, isn't he?
Mike Tyson is kind of a go-to guy in foreign territories.
No, absolutely. He's a well-known face, isn't he? Especially now with the tattoos.
Still a convicted rapist, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he is.
So nobody ever really remembers that anymore. but yes, he is. I didn't mind him. I say, if you compare this, say going in, compare it to China Salesman 2, I mean, worlds apart, in terms of the quality of the action, the amount of the action.
Oh yeah,
the comprehensibility of the story.
Yeah, the combat scenes are really well done. The bits of the parkour and stuff. There's a bit where they're sort of trying to convince this village leader that they're friends and everything, and at the same time they got guys scaling the walls and sort of subduing them and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really well done. You can't fault it.
Yeah, the action is. I'll just mention the action's by the European stunt team. I think the guy who did it is who leads the team is Denny Jordan. I think he's Dutch, but they've worked on The Cell, for example, which had some really good action in it that we saw before. But they've done quite a lot in Egypt at the moment, so I just wanted to give them a mention.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the quality, because they've done some. This is a great showcase for them and what they've been able to achieve. Because there really is a lot of action and most of it's really, really good.
It is, yeah. It's just the dubbing, If you can see past the dubbing, then there's a lot to enjoy here, If you can get past the first scene, which is a bit grim, to be honest, it's a bit out of step with the rest of the film. But the main crux of the film, the men on the mission, the putting the team together stuff. It's well worn territory, but it's very well done. It's very entertaining.
Yeah. I also want to mention that I think for the most part, it seemed like everything was, for majority of it was practical. There wasn't really any obvious CG, no obvious CG bullet
Shots
or anything.
A lot of good pyrotechnics and bullet scopes and things going on. It looked really good quality. So we're coming to the scores, guys. Steve, what are you going to score Pharaoh's War?
I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'll give it a 7 as well. So, Rich?
I'm going to give it a high 7. And my last comment is that they shot it in... they shot some of it in Beirut. And there are some... it's terrifying, really. But there are some beautiful scenes of war-ravaged locations. The only way you could say it. It looks... It's shot amazingly, but these are buildings and whatever that are destroyed by horrific conflicts and that. But it looks incredible on screen.
They take an even bigger pounding during the film as well. So
yeah.
It probably helped the local, local economy. Sort of like, well, we'll help you get rid of these buildings for you.
Yeah, so that's 7 out of 10 from me. Yep. I can't remember if I mentioned it.
Yep, so it's 3 yep. sevens for Pharaoh's War. We think this is a pretty decent little film. Check it out.
And if you want to hear more about Egyptian action movies, go back to episode 90, which is our Egypt special.
Yeah. Our next review then is Russian Raid. A mercenary called Nikita orchestrates a hostile takeover of a factory run by the local organized crime organization. Working with a couple of corrupt bureaucrats and a gang of thugs, entry into the complex proves to be relatively easy, but getting back out may be a challenge. So there's been a lot of talk, a lot of hyperbole about this film. Oh, it's, literally, it's the Russian Raid, there's a lot of comparisons to the Ike Uwe film, Gareth Evans' film, The Raid, mainly because it's in a building and there's lots of fighting. But for me, this is kind of like the antithesis of The Raid. It's kind of like the opposite. whereas The Raid was, it was a group of people sort of being whittled down to sort of a plucky hero against sort of, thousands of sort of thugs after him. This one, it's a bunch of thugs who've got the upper hand and are having a whale of a time sort of beating up the security guards and until it's not fun anymore, basically. So I'm going to kick this straight over to Steve.
It baffled me slightly. I mean, is this what hostile takeover is in Russia? Honestly, where you're basically just going, you go and kick the shit out of everyone and get them to sign the papers over. Because
possibly.
It seemed, when they got to the guys, it was like, okay, then, right, fair enough, you've done it. We'll sign it over. Yeah. It was quite baffling. I didn't get if that was any sort of real semblance or anything, but the fight scenes were great on the way, and I like the twist where he's doing it not to take over the factory. There's a hidden reason for the main guy, what he wants, why he's doing it, and you've obviously got that slimy little bastard who's with him trying to use
the Nick Moran character. Money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, and the fight scenes were great, and it's fun up to a point, and then it just kind of changes tack and gets a hell of a lot more serious. And then they become the heroes trying to rescue the hostages that they've just taken.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, and it throws you. It really does throw you. But no, overall, I did enjoy it.
Yeah. Rich, how do you find the Russian Raid?
Yeah, I was really looking forward to it, and the fight scenes are really good, I thought, although some of the, I don't know if it's the way they're shot or the way they're edited, but the way the sort of the camera will suddenly turn and sort of jump in or jump back or whatever, sort of little stylistic touches they added, which ruined it a little bit for me. But the choreography is really top notch. The guy who's the lead character, Ivan Is it Ivan Kotick?
Yeah, as I think so.
Peter.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the moves. He's really good. I mean, he's very. To look at him, you wouldn't think. You know, he's kind of, that he would have these skills and stuff. But you know, there's an introduction thing where he's doing like a handstand press up and stuff, and sort of hitting, you know, doing his moves against, and also doing some I think it's like Cossack kind of dancing kind of thing as well, which he also ties.
Must be an absolute pain on the knees, that thing.
Yeah, and he ties that in to some of the fights that he's doing. He ties in the dancing, which is quite interesting. So it's that stuff's good, but what I did find it hard to engage with the story, the motivations for the character, and you know who my allegiances should be with. Because I was thinking, I watch gangster movies and you know crime films or whatever, where you follow the bad guys doing bad things, but these guys were not particularly. These were thugs, and although you kind of knew that, okay, at some point the tables are going to turn, it's going to be a bit different. You were kind of thinking, okay, who are the bad guys in this situation? Are these bad guys, or are the people they're actually taking out the bad guys? And it turns out they're all actually bad guys, I think. there's another character. There's a lady walking around in a white suit, a bit like in the Columnist that we watched just recently. Very similar outfit, and she's kind of lingering around and doing her own thing. What's her agenda? You know, there's a little bit of intrigue there. But yeah, I found this. Although the fight scenes were really good, I was disengaging from the story, and I was quite tired, and you know, didn't. I was like, oh, okay, I'll sort of finish this off later, and then I went and watched it again like the next morning after getting to sleep, and even then, I was getting a bit tired and a bit sleep, and you know, I've only just woken up. So why is the film putting me to sleep? I was a bit unsure about, and yeah, so it goes from sort of MMA style, you know, unarmed combat to then sort of the heavy artillery comes in, and it's, you know, it's a gunplay movie.
But it's a nice element. To, you know, I like the way the script covers this, because obviously normal people don't carry around guns, but you know, this security firm owned by the bad guys, you know, are armed to the teeth. So Mr. Slimy, Nick Moran kind of character, arranges for some paperwork to go missing, so all their guns get confiscated, you know, a couple of days before.
Yeah.
So all they've got are their sort of clubs, or you know, their sort of edged weapons, which is, you know, a nice way of sort of getting around, you know, well, why don't they use the guns in kind of scenario.
It's like a US SEALs 2 kind of thing.
But it's nicely put in there, I thought. But I'm kind of with you to a certain degree in that, you know, basically what we're watching is a bunch of football hooligans, you know, beating up a bunch of sort of salary men, security guards. You know, these are guys who took this job because it's cushy. Basically, it doesn't really amount to much, because no one's going to fuck with these organized crime guys. You know, they're there just for show, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get their asses handed to them by these guys. One of whom I kept looking at, and I keep thinking, is that Kevin Bridges? You know, he looks like, you know, the Scottish comedian. He sort of looks like... You know the main bullshit sort of one. That's all I kept thinking of. It's like he's the Russian Kevin Bridges, which is quite funny. But
give me a pounder, I'll stab you.
All that sort of stuff. But yeah, you know, for the first half of the film, it's like these guys are enjoying themselves way too much. You know, pounding on these sort of middle-aged security guards and things. You know, okay, some muscle guys in there and that, and a couple of guys are ready for a proper fight. But a lot of it is like you just beat up old men, kind of thing. Or you know, they're not ready for a fight. But then you get to a certain point of the film, and the tables turn. You know, and the real bad guys turn up, and suddenly you know the stakes change completely, because these guys are fucking ruthless. You know, and have you know, proper tactics.
Well, a couple of the fights in the beginning, you know, there are some formidable opponents. I mean, there's that sword fight scene. Yeah.
The sword fight's really cool. The guy with the axe, you know, the really big guy.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. Yeah, but most of them, you know, the first sort of two or three levels they go through, you know, where they're having to zip tie the guys, it's like a piece of piss, basically. But, the, you know, it's just like... It's almost like a fight on the terraces, you know. It's,
yeah. That's why I was saying I couldn't understand the motives for the
like heroic character. Who's like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand the lead. We're introduced to the main character in a war situation. He effectively gets his spotter killed or something because he's a sniper, I think, and so he's out of the military, and then he's kind of, I guess, looking for work or whatever, and he has a little bit of a reminiscence about his dad, and then he's off to work with these thugs and stuff, and you're like, what, why, you know, am I supposed to like you doing this or whatever, you know? So it was just a bit weird, and I know his motivations come out towards the end, and again, I'm not sure that makes sense, because it's almost like he knew that if he took this job, that it was going to lead to him having the confrontation with the person he was trying to have a confrontation with the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because how could you have foreseen that? How would you have been able to plan that?
I think that is a valid plan. Yeah, I think if you hit one of his his organizations hard enough, he is going to notice, and he is going to personally take, you know, an interest. So I didn't have a problem with that at all. You know,
I think we have seen that in other stuff as well. I didn't click with it, to be honest. And so I mean, I think the choreography and the martial arts and everything is definitely a reason to see it. The associations, you know, the film was inspired by the raid. You know, so it's sort of wearing its heart on its sleeve in what, you know, the call it Russian Raid, you know, they couldn't be more upfront about it. That's not the title that's been tagged onto it. That's what the film is called. That's what they made.
The actual title was Ruski Raid, you know, it's weird.
It is enjoyable, but you know, I've got, like Rich says, I've got some reservations, because you just don't, until it does that flip like three quarters of the way through, you are kind of like, they're just a bunch of knobs, and they're
exactly. The bit, you know, when they finally get to the main office, and then the guy sort of, you know, he's barricaded himself in, you know, the film kind of stalls while they're sort of like trying to do the actual hostile takeover bit with the paperwork, you know.
Yeah.
They've literally brought along a notary and a, you know, a clerk.
Which was all very weird, because I was like, what is happening here?
I thought that was when they're introduced at the beginning, you know, and they sort of go, who are they? I go, oh, that's the notary, and that's the clerk. I'm thinking, is that a euphemism for something? Is that like a code? Are they going to turn out to be badass assassins or something? You know, no, we're here with we're going to emboss the paperwork so it's all legal and everything. So, Jesus, right, okay. My favourite scene in the film, actually, which kind of sort of speaks to the sort of the cynicalness of the whole thing, is one of the security guards manages to get away, you know, when they're sort of on their way, and he runs into his boss's office. He's going, you know, there's people coming, they're sort of tying everyone up or under attack. And he goes, is anyone dead? He goes, no. He goes, well, don't worry about it then. He's like, what?
Yeah.
He goes, do you care? It's like, do you care who your boss is at the end of the day? You know, is it this guy? Is it that guy? As long as you get paid, who cares? Which I thought was weird.
That's the chief of police who's in on it. So it's like, oh, shit, you got out. I'm going to have to try and keep this on the down low now.
it's funny, but I mean, the, you know, and even he saw like going, you know, we don't want to upset, we don't want to make waves so that this guy comes down on us. And, you know, of course, that's exactly what happens. But the film does sort of like, you know, it does shift gears by that point. It's no longer, you know, football hooliganism. It's like a proper sort of Spetsnaz trained unit, sort of like ruthlessly sort of gunning people down. And it becomes a much more interesting film from that point on, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. Which is, for me, it kind of lost me there. I can't remember that much about that part of the film. It's really weird, and I just sort of disengaged.
That becomes Urban Rambo because he's you know, he's set all these traps and shit, and you know, I thought that was.
Yeah, I think cool. I'll just give a quick shout out to it's hard to find, but there's a Russian action movie called Hunt for Piranha, which is a bit like he does a bit of a Rambo thing.
Piranha.
Yeah, because his code name is Piranha. That's got some questionable sort of sexual politics in the film and stuff. But if you ever see it, it's worth a look. I've watched it a couple of times. It's got some quite entertaining sequences. But this guy, Ivan Kotick, is not particularly charismatic as a lead, I didn't think. But he does have the skills in the fight scenes. I'm just looking. Checking his IMDb, he's been in some of the films covered in. Well, he's been in one of the. We covered The Iron Mask. He was in that as a character, but I wouldn't recognize him. I'd have to go back and look at these films. I watched Legendary recently, and he was in that as a character called Greg, apparently. But I couldn't say that I recognized him from that.
He's pretty far down the cast list in the films he has been in. But usually his characters are named. Which is more than sort of like just spectator or, you know, terrorist number three or something like that. So
well, he was sergeant in Chinese Zodiac. That's and right. soldier in something else, Roman soldier in Dragon Blade. But yeah, he's got okay. So I'd be interested to see what he and the choreography team and everything from this film do next to where they go, because I think in terms of Russian action movies, although it's kind of been put forward as like, this is kind of the breakthrough, this is, you know, this is the big thing from Russia. I don't think it is. I think I've seen better films from Russia, better action films, I'm saying, that have been a bit more interesting than.
I think this is going to do well, though.
The fact that Eureka have picked this up for distribution is quite extraordinary, because that is not the kind of thing that they would normally handle.
Yeah, absolutely. The buzz on online has been very positive for this. A lot of the websites that I read, a lot of the people I follow on Twitter have been sort of very positive about this. So I got a feeling that when it is, when it does hit the shelves, it's going to do pretty well. And on that note, how are we going to score it, Rich?
I'm going to go a 7 again, but it's like a lower 7 than for our first film.
I'm also going to go a 7. As I said, I think this sort of stalled in the middle. And the thing about this and a lot of Russian films in general is there is a sort of morose atmosphere to them.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes sort of difficult to enjoy, because just from the cadence and the way they talk and everything, I think I read somewhere that, the Russians don't generally smile. No one's going to sort of smile at you. just sort of say, hi, they smile. They think it's a waste of time, and they think it's like, it's just like false. So there is a sort of morose sort of atmosphere that goes with a lot of Russian films, and I think that pervades this one as well.
Well, so, even though there's that girl in it, you think there's going to be like a love interest or something might happen there, but he's very much focused on his mission, and he's not a happy soul, is he? He's kind of all about business.
So 7 for me, 7 from Rich and Steve.
I'll stick with 7 with you guys as well.
I think that's fair. So another 3 7s for Russian Raid. Our next film is Sentinel. After surviving a traumatic combat mission in Afghanistan, Clara is sent back to France, where she is transferred into the Sentinels, a 10,000-strong task force who patrol the key points of entry into the country. She must not only adjust to the new rules of engagement, but also dealing with her own mental state. However, when her sister is raped, badly beaten, and left for dead on the beach, her focus is purely on vengeance. So this stars Olga Kurienko and is directed by Julien Leclerc, who did JCVD, I believe.
No, The Bouncer.
The Bouncer. Thank you. Yep, that's the other one. I enjoy this. Now, a lot of people had seen this before me and sort of commented online, and they were, a lot of people have been very down on this film. I didn't mind it, I must admit. I thought this was actually pretty decent. I thought Olga Kuryenko was very good, you know, as this sort of very sort of damaged goods kind of person, sort of, you know, dealing with this sort of PTSD of her own, ended up sort of addicted to painkillers, and refusing to get involved with a psychiatrist like a commanding officer once. But, you know, and then sort of being faced with this this sort of tragedy and trying to deal with it. So, yeah, I'm quite on board with this one. Rich, how about you?
Yeah, I too had seen some negative reviews, and I did also quite enjoy it. I mean, it's one of those things you go in with certain expectations. I thought it was going to be much more of an action movie than it actually is. I mean, there is action in it, but I definitely put it more in the thriller sort of category, because it's more of a slow burn, and it's not really, there's not really joyful action in it. You know, it's very sort of there's one major scene that takes place, you know, confrontation in a hospital room. Between Kurilenko and another performer, which is really good. It's a proper throwdown, you know, high stakes fight towards the end of the movie. But the rest of it is there's some gunplay. Oh, there's a bit where she beats up guys in a
nightclub
toilet, nightclub, yeah, stuff. So yeah, there's those bits, but they're kind of punctuation points. It's more of the emphasis is on drama, really. Her character reminded me of, funnily enough, Jean-Claude Van Damme in the film We Die Young, where he's playing a soldier, you know, a former soldier, PTSD, addicted to drugs. He's sort of going, standing, you know, he's got a dealer that he goes to in that film, in the same way that she ends up going to dealers and stuff. But she's really unstable in this. You know, she's having encounters, she's seeing things, and, you know, they're, you know, getting flashbacks and causing her quite, you know, causing some quite tense situations where you think she's really going to lose it put people's real lives in jeopardy. I don't know if the Sentinel thing is a real thing that was, and was it put in place as a result of the terror attacks a few years ago? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so it was formed in 2015, apparently. I think, and it was as a direct result of a terrorist attack that happened in January of that year, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, so that makes sense, because it's quite interesting. You're seeing these teams are walking around, you know, fully armed and that, and the people are just not really paying much attention. But you know, they're not like, oh my god, there's someone with a gun or whatever. It's just like, yeah, this is how it is here. Yeah. But I guess that, you know, you get the same if you go to London. You know, you've got the armed police officers, you know, walking around there. You just get used to that kind of thing, I suppose. And So her performance is really good, I think. The revenge sort of plotting of it, I think, is interestingly handled, because it's a little bit different to what other, you know, we've seen this kind of thing a million times before, and I think it does something interesting with it, with the whole PTSD thing, you know, with her, bending the rules, breaking the rules She's very driven, and she doesn't really mind what the consequences are. You know, she's quite interestingly written and portrayed, I think.
Yeah. Steve, did you get on with this one?
Not as much as you two, I don't think. I thought Kuryenko was absolutely great. I thought she's performance is really good, but I just thought the beginning, well, that was just fucking harrowing, to be fair. What happens and what she sees and stuff. Then it just, I don't know, I just think she's just too unstable for what she should be doing. I don't think that she should be doing it, and they'd yank her straight out. Because it's not just...
They didn't do a proper psych evaluation, did they?
It's not so much that. It's the fact that, you know, when she's out on the streets with them and she starts flipping out and stuff, and some of the stuff she does, you'd be just like, no, you're not fit enough to be on the streets. You need to take you off, blah, blah, blah. And also, not when she goes out with her sister and in the nightclub, and, you know, obviously she pulls the woman.
Mm.
And again, to me, that didn't really seem necessary because there's no back to that. It's just,
yeah.
Well, we'll go it's back like, to yours and bang and that's it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, so she's a lesbian. Okay, fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting it. As well, no... the fact that she doesn't get any actual training for her new role. It's just like, you ship back and then you with the Sentinels now. You know, no one actually sort of...
Yes.
As I said, you know, my intro, the rules of engagement are completely different. You know, the first thing she does is rescue this girl from being beat up by a boyfriend by almost drowning him in the sea, you know, and people have to sort of pull her off. And there's another bit where they go for a coffee on the sort of rooftop terrace of some, you know, cafe or something. And she's using a rifle to sort of scope the people below. And it's like, if anyone spotted her doing it, you know, he'd think she's about being like a lone gunner.
Yeah. Active shooter kind of situation. Yeah.
That's what I mean. It just little things that didn't ring true. And it kind of threw me out of the film, to be fair. And then when you find out what actually happens, you know, it's obvious. You can see it coming a mile off, to be fair.
Mm.
But yeah, like Rich was saying, the scene in the hospital, that was cracking. That was amazing. I really enjoyed that scene. It was just brutal as hell.
Yeah.
It was a proper, proper throwdown, you know. And then the ending, that really pissed me off because it's just tacked on, you know.
It reminded me of American Assassin, actually, that last scene. Is American Assassin? Mm. The one with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but yeah, it's
got a similar sort of ending, kind of, or it's leading into that sort of ending. But I like the whole bit in Paris. You know that I thought that was a good thing. You know, and I must admit, I was kind of expecting a bit of a sort of heroic bloodshed kind of ending. You know, I was thinking, is she going to be able to get out of this? Or, you know, is this a suicide mission? It's just going to be sort of like a war of attrition until she just can't, you know, until she just bleeds out sort of thing. But so that whole sequence is really good, I thought. Yeah, but this is, it's on Netflix at the moment. We enjoyed it a bit more than some of our... counterparts have it on other platforms, I believe, but there you go. We gave it a shot, I think.
Yeah, I think it's decently made. Interesting. I think you've brought up some really valid points about the lack of, you know, thinking through that she should have had some training and whatever for this particular situation. Because obviously it's completely not addressed at all. She is just thrown into these new situations. So I think that's a valid criticism. The in terms of the director's work, Julien Leclerc is. He puts out quite a lot of films, like recently he's like doing one a year or something, and he works on a TV series as well. But I'd really liked Lucas, The Bouncer, and he did some early films like Chrysalis was a sci-fi film, which was quite
interesting. I love that film. Yeah.
The Assault I didn't like.
No, The Assault is rubbish.
And it's all shot in blue, which is horrible.
Weird sort of colours sort of thing. But Chrysalis is a damn good film.
Which again, you know, martial arts sort of fight scenes have been there in his films from then, really. You know, that's a film that's, you know, very sci-fi, but it's punctuated with these fight scenes, isn't it? Which are really well done. And there's a couple of other films that he's done that are on Netflix as well, called Earth and Blood and The Crew, which I haven't seen yet, but I hear good things about them. So I think he's definitely he's one of the best directors, you know, working with action, you know, coming out of France and that. So this is definitely, if you're interested in, because this is a French movie, you know, Olga Kurylenko speaks French in this and stuff. So if you're interested in French action cinema, I think this is definitely worth a look, even if it's not, you know, it's not 100%.
Yeah.
It's not very memorable. You know, it's very brief. I mean, a lot of Leclerc's films are like 80 minutes long. So this is over in like 75 minutes.
Yeah. Flawed but entertaining, I think, is the reward of the day.
I'd give it a 7.
Yep. Steve?
I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, I'm going to join Rich on a 7. Yeah, it's just, I think, I don't know if my expectations were tempered by what I'd been reading from other people saying, oh, it's crap. I need, you know, people sort of saying, oh, switch it off after 20 minutes or, you know, this sort of nonsense and thinking, well, okay. So I was sort of going into this, you know,
expecting the worst.
Expecting the worst, but no, I thought there's a lot to enjoy here. Yeah, there's a lot of holes. You know, there are a lot of plot holes and things which aren't addressed or papered over. But you know, the action is enjoyable. The acting is pretty decent. So yeah, 7 and a 6 for Sentinel. Our next review is SAS Red Notice. The Black Swans are a paramilitary group covertly hired by the UK government to clear out villages in Georgia to allow a gas pipeline to be built. When their brutality is captured on camera, the Prime Minister orders an immediate cover-up leading to the death of the Swans' leader, William Lewis. In retaliation, William's daughter Grace Lewis organises a hostile takeover of the Eurostream train on its way to Paris. Holding the passengers hostage, she and her men demand a huge ransom, but they hadn't reckoned on an SAS member, Tom Buckingham, on being on board on his way to Paris with his soon-to-be fiancée, Sophie. So, Rich, you've been looking forward to this film for a while.
Yeah.
How did it stand up?
Well, for the most part, I say it stands up well. I'm not sold on Sam Heughan as the lead. I know he's got a big following from, I believe it's Outlander or Outland TV series.
Outlander,
yeah, that he does, which I don't know. This is the first thing I've ever, to my knowledge, seen him in. I don't really like the Tom Buckingham character or his, it's not, I don't know if it's his performance of it or the character, but I didn't think he was a great action lead, although I thought So here's the interesting thing about his character is he's a psychopath, as in he's literally a psychopath. He's been diagnosed as a psychopath. So he's got no empathy or anything, and he can just, disconnect from emotions and stuff. Well, he doesn't have many emotions, basically. So that's his arc in the story is he's finding himself in a relationship where he wants to get married. And does he really love her? Does he really understand what love is? That's kind of the overarching arc for his character in the story. And he and his wife, you know, he's taken his girlfriend away to Paris and stuff to propose. But in terms of the action hero stakes, you know, he's fine, but you can't help but think, you know, I would have preferred an action person like a Scott Adkins in that role. You just can't help it, really. But even like something like Stratton, I think Dominic Cooper was a much more engaging character as Stratton in that particular film. Yep. which is probably in a similar ballpark to this. But I would say that on the counterpoint of that is Ruby Rose is an excellent villain.
Yeah, he certainly is, yeah.
So there's loads of movies coming out that are rip-offs of Die Hard at the moment. And funnily enough, Ruby Rose has played the hero in one. Yeah. In The Doorman, and now she's playing the villain in another, and both are you know, really decent films. I think The Doorman is probably a better Die Hard knockoff than this is, even though this is has a much grander scale. I think
this is more like Under Siege 2, basically, isn't it?
But it's not, yeah, that's the thing, but it's nowhere near as. I mean, the cool thing about Under Siege 2 was, you know, they're not, it's on the go, you got the scenery, you know, the train sets are really good, whereas this, you've got the quite expansive opening with all the fields and, you know, open wood, and then you're in the tunnel, and then you're in properly, and the train isn't moving.
Yeah.
So you're in proper set territory. You know, feels like a set. There's not a lot of authenticity there. Whereas when you're on the scenes on the outside, it's a lot more engaging, I think. So the actual Die Hard honor part, which is the sort of central part of the film, is not as strong as perhaps like the beginning and the end, which I thought was a bit of a shame. And also don't like some of the stuff about what happens with the characters, although I think there's some interesting ideas. I think there's too many. It's a bit like with Russian Raid, really. You know how, you know, they're doing this mission. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Who are we supposed to be rooting for? You're not quite sure. In this case, at least, Tom Buckingham is established as a proper good guy, even though he's sort of hard to relate to one. You know, he is the proper hero of the story, and there's an emotional thing for him to be doing. You know, he's got to save his beloved, whereas Russian Raid didn't have that. So I think that's the difference with this, is that that's why that part works so well. And also there's a nice balance between the hero, between Buckingham and Ruby Rose's Grace. You know, they're kind of the same. They've both got the same kind of personalities, but they've been raised very differently, and you know, life has taken them in different directions. So they relate to each other. At one point towards the end, I thought, are they gonna kiss or something? Is there gonna be like a Batman Catwoman thing happening between the two of them? Because there seems to be at one point an emotional connection, which is stronger than what we've seen between him and his, you know, his girlfriend, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've tweeted one of my sort of misgivings about this film, in that sort of the main character, as you said, Tom Buckingham is the hero. He is fucking ridiculously rich in this. You know, he owns Downton Abbey, basically. You know, he's even got his own Alfred sort of character. You know, he's Bruce Wayne without the Batman bit.
Yeah.
And which makes him so unrelatable.
He's Lara Croft.
To most people, you know, for most people, it's going to be very difficult to relate to somebody who comes from that sort of background.
And who's a psychopath.
And he's a psychopath. and his idea of a big romantic gesture to his girlfriend, who he hasn't seen for 3 weeks, is to turn up at her job, tell her he's taking her to Paris, and that he's made sure that all her shifts have been rearranged so that she can just sort of pack up and go immediately, and expects her to do it. You know, he hardly waits for her to say yes. He's already out the door, you know, and she's still going, no, no, he's going, yep, see you tomorrow, bye. You know? It's like, I think that's a bit of a red flag for, you know, sort of future relationship, you know, just how sort of controlling and in her life he's going to be.
That's a whole 50 Shades
kind of.
Exactly. What's that character's name? I can't remember, but the 50 Shades guy is basically what we're talking about.
Christian Grey.
So he is Christian Grey, action hero, basically.
Yeah. But the cast is very good. I didn't mind Sam Heughan in this, and I'd seen the first series of Outlander. Ruby Rose is brilliant in this. Got great support from Tom Wilkinson. His scenes are great. Andy Serkis is just absolutely superb in this as well. He's sort of this SAS liaison guy, sort of between the SAS and sort of Prime Minister and the Black Swans. You know, he's the one sort of brokering these sort of deals. And I thought he was superb, sort of, you know, in that role.
And we've also got Tom Hopper from Kill Ratio.
Tom Hopper, I was going to get onto as well. And Noel Clarke.
And Noel Clarke as well. And Jing Lucy as the... I would say obligatory female member of the terrorist team, but obviously you've got Ruby Rose leading them. But you know, in the grand, you usually have a team where there's
always a female. Yeah, even in Assault on Station 33 that we covered in the previous episode, you know, you need the obligatory female character.
I liked all the performances, actually. From the top down, they're all really good. I mean, Tom Wilkinson's putting on an American accent, which is not one of my favorite things, but you know, that's fine. The whole film was shot in Hungary, I believe, but looks pretty good. I would say all the exterior stuff is great. I think it's the set stuff that does let the film down just a bit, unfortunately. I mean, it was inevitable, but there's also the fact that they couldn't call the Eurostar the Eurostar.
Yeah, they call it the Eurostream.
Eurostream, and the Channel Tunnel set and everything is... Not as authentic. So that took me out a bit, because this is based on a book, which Chris Andy Ryan. McNabb.
Andy McNabb wrote.
Andy McNabb wrote it in 2012. He's gone on to do two others with this character, Fortress and State of Emergency. But Red Notice was the one that introduced it, and in that book, I believe he does refer to it as the Eurostar. I guess it's different in a book. You can name drop in that. And then in a movie, they were like, no, actually, you're not you're not blowing up an actual.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, or taking
that's
over.
The thing, isn't it? I mean, they will say in films, you know, if they use an actual airline sort of logo and things in a film, you know that nothing is going to happen to the airplane.
Yeah. You know,
there's nothing going to happen to the airplane because they don't want to be associated with disaster. And it's exactly the same thing with the Eurotunnel and everything.
Unless it's a film like United 93 or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get away with it.
Can't get away from that then.
So I thought this was very solid. I'm a big fan of Stratton. And you know that this has a sort of a familiar, a similar sort of feel. I liked all the dialogue between sort of Tom Hopper's character and sort of the hero. Mm. I thought you know, and sort of that sort of communication level, I thought was really good. What I hated was
strong word.
I know it's a strong word, but I seriously do. I just think it was a total misstep. All the bloody newsreel shit.
Ah, Sky News.
Oh God, no! I mean, I don't mind the fact that it's Sky News. I mean, that's fine, but the sort of things they're reporting on would never ever get reported. You would never ever get a news report going on about the SAS have issued, you know, or the government has issued a red notice and the SAS are going to carry it out on this guy before they've even done it. Yeah, you'd hear about it afterwards, maybe.
That's a good point.
But they're going, oh yeah, this guy, you know, this because of the footage that's been released and everything, they wouldn't report on that shit. The government wouldn't allow them to do all that.
It's a fair point. How would they even know? Because that would be all like
need to know. Basically, in seconds, they're going, oh, we've just heard there's, you know, the Eurotunnel has been shut down because of this. You know,
I think there's a mole.
Yeah. Well,
is...
you don't say. now there is a mole, as we find out, and. Which is reasonably well handled. If you're paying attention to certain person's dialogue early on, you'll know straight away who it is. But the film sort of, you know, eventually it sort of narrows it down. You get to a point where it's like, well, it can only be one of two people who the mole is, you know. And I thought it did a reasonable job of sort of like balancing that. You know, keeping you guessing up to a point where you cut. You know, it's not a guess game anymore. It whittles it down to one, basically. You know, the film does the job for you. So, I guess it's not him then. But yeah, I thought that was pretty decently done. It's just those news reports, and the whole bit with the Prime Minister. I thought, you know, what I did like actually was when the guy from the gas company joined the cabinet.
Britgas.
Yeah. when he joined the cabinet meeting, and he just got the impression that, yeah, he's more powerful than the Prime Minister at this point. So, but yeah, all the stuff in there, all those stupid little news things, even at the end, all the news stuff. You know, you wouldn't hear about this stuff. You just wouldn't.
Now, am I right? I don't know if you'll remember, but when you think of a train action scene and the Channel Tunnel, you generally go to Mission Impossible.
Yep.
And that's a pretty high standard that this film can't even come close to sort of matching. So they don't even try. You know, there's no action on the moving train.
No.
It's all once it's stationary and whatever. But I had a funny feeling that didn't Sky News do news reports in Mission Impossible as well? I'm sure there's.
Yes, they did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of an interesting sort of tie-in. But the thing I wanted to sort of bring up is that, okay, in the third act, the gas pipeline.
Yep.
So there's a bit where he gets his head put into the pipe.
Yeah.
And he's being sort of drowned, you know, being suffocated or whatever by the gas.
Yeah.
And then he sort of comes out again or something. How is the gas not coming out of the side of that pipe? Right. And the second thing, but it doesn't seem to be affecting them much. It's only when you put the head inside. So, but apart from that, so they travel through the pipe at high speed.
How did he keep up?
How is that? Would that be a thing? Could that happen?
Oh, that's
you could travel through a pipe. on a gas pipe.
Big enough, yeah, because they're just using compressed air to sort of fire along. They're not, you know.
Right.
I imagine that would work. I mean,
because he got to the exact point. They managed to get to the point safely.
Yeah. I table my evidence. The Living Daylights.
It's been a long time since I've seen that. I don't remember.
That's how they get Yorgi out of Eastern Germany.
Oh, okay.
Through a gas pipeline. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So I was a bit thrown by that whole thing because I was thinking, one, how can the gas? It was almost like there was like a window or whatever, and it was like, I put you through it into the gas. Now you're out of the gas. And wouldn't it be streaming everywhere? But maybe
it might be heavier. You know, if it's heavier than air, then it probably would stay within the.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Like I say it's not anything I know or understand. So it was quite an interesting thing to, but it just sort of pulled me out. I was like, what? Oh, hang on, I don't really understand. Is that physically possible? But sounds like it is, so fair enough.
There's two things I want to mention about the ending without sort of like giving any actual spoilers away. One is that Ruby Rose's character joins the echelons of Lance Henriksen in Stone Cold, because as a bad guy, she actually wins. You know, essentially, she wins. She gets everything she wants.
Well, that is that is kind of one of the curious things, because it is that who is right and who is wrong and what's the positive outcome from this situation where it's like bad and bad. It's a bit like, say, with Russian raids, like who. What's the positive outcome from this? Because you're all basically or corrupt or tools of, you know, destruction. You're not, nobody's helping anyone out. But there are some interesting themes that are brought up in the movie. Like, okay, well, you want your, you want to live comfortably in your houses or whatever. Mm. We're the reason that you are.
Exactly. Yeah, the reason you've got central heating. It's thanks to us, basically.
Yeah, you don't want to know how the hamburger's made, you know, kind of thing.
That's it, yeah. The other thing I want to mention as well is it's not really well handled as much, but there's a sort of, with the girlfriend, Sophie, it's an attempt at sort of playing her as a sort of this sort of pacifist character, a bit like Grace Kelly in High Noon, you know, that she's a pacifist sort of thing. Oh, yeah. And then you get to the end, and you know, you mentioned the fact that sort of, you know, Buckingham is a psychopath. She's an enabler. You know,
yeah.
By the end of the film, she is completely enabling his psychosis.
Yeah, there's something really weird going on. I don't like that epilogue. I was like, what is going on with this character? It's really the way she's funny. Talking. It's just I was quite uncomfortable with it. she was like saying it so casually and adding in swear words and stuff.
I
was thinking, you're the psycho, I think. I don't know.
It's very weird.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. But anyway, the whole psychopath thing was interesting, and I thought I didn't quite connect with it. But after watching the film, you know, I research it and I find out that Andy McNab himself is a psychopath, and the character is based, he's written it based on his experience, and it's a character, sort of a version of himself, basically. So having that real world grounding and understanding that, you know, it's written by Andy McNab, who is diagnosed as a functional psychopath, I believe they call it, and he's going up against a dysfunctional psychopath. That adds a whole other dimension. Actually, that makes me respect the project a lot more, because it seemed quite exploitative, or you know, a weird idea that they've thrown in. But to realise it's an actual thing it's actually quite fascinating, because I wasn't, you know, it's not anything that I've ever come across before in a heroic character, you know, for them to have this. So I think that is an interesting dimension to the film. Does it fully work? Not for me, because it means I wasn't relating to the character as well as I might relate to another action hero. But I think it was certainly an interesting it adds an interesting dimension, especially when I was only really excited about it because I want to see an action movie that takes place on the Eurostar, you know.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this, apart from my misgivings about the news reports, basically.
I would like to have seen a Paul Tanta version. Imagine He Who Dares 3. Now, I think that would have been quite cool. Or a Kill Ratio 2. You know, that would, you know, put Tom Hopper in the lead and he and his character from, I know he was playing an American in Kill Ratio, but his character is in that situation. I know it wouldn't have been, you know, it wouldn't have been as polished as this, obviously, but as a fan of, you know, low budget, you know, action movies and stuff, I think it would have been an interesting, it might have been even a more interesting film than this because it's playing in a different sandbox, if you see what I mean. Whereas this is trying to be a big studio movie and not quite reaching those heights. This is more of a, do you know what I'm getting at? This is kind of like a London Has Fallen kind of thing.
I'd put this on the same sort of level as Final Score.
Oh, Final Score is much better though.
Yeah, I agree because it's not as
silly. Better action. It's more authentic. You know, that's a really good Die Hard. That's probably one of the best Die Hard knockoffs recently.
I'd put that on the top end, but I'd put this in the same wheelhouse.
Well, that's fair. I think it is fair. I mean, but if you're interested, I mean, this is more of a Stratton experience, I think, than the sort of really enjoyable action fest that Final Score was.
It's good fun, and you know, another shout out to Ruby Rose because that. That very final scene of hers was absolutely superb. You know, it's something we've seen a lot, but she does something different with it.
You know? Yeah, I think I've really turned around on Ruby Rose because I've not been that interested in her, to be honest. And you know, I know she was in John Wick and stuff and The Meg, but I didn't really take notice. But I think the sort of double whammy of her performances in The Doorman, or actually, you know, her action performances in this and The Doorman sort of really marked her out. I don't think she should do this again, but you know, because you can get she could get too pigeonholed and whatever. So I'd like to see her doing a bit more varied roles. But I think certainly, you know, she suits action movies.
She's got another one coming out with Morgan Freeman.
Oh yeah, I watched the trailer. To be honest, I don't like the look of it. I think it looks a bit rubbish.
I don't know.
Does
it could be just a bad trailer.
Maybe. It just looks quite low budget and not very polished. You know, it looks like Morgan Freeman shot all of his shot scenes over the course of one night. And then it's all about he sets her a job of going out and, you know, delivering some stuff or whatever. And he's holding her door hostage. I wasn't really that blown. I think, was it Vanquish? I think it's called
Vanquish. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that doesn't look as, I mean, I might be wrong, but it doesn't look as polished as The Doorman.
We shall see. Anyway, scores on the doors for this one, Rich.
Well, despite my misgivings, it's still going to be a 7.
Yeah, this is quite a high 7 for me. I thoroughly enjoyed this, even with its flaws. There's a whole sequence where they, you know, they go after Tom Wilkinson's character in his new country home, and I thought that was really well done. Even if it starts crap with them trying to kick this door down, just absolutely ridiculous. But the rest,
I do really want to see it again. I mean, I've been thinking about watching it again recently. You know, just today, I was thinking, I really want to see it again. I think there's so many good little bits in it, and interesting performances and ideas, and that there's a lot in there.
Yeah. So this has come out on Sky Cinema, so it's available there. But you know, hopefully, like Final Score did, you know, it will eventually find its way onto DVD as well and get a sort of wider audience. But you know, if you're a subscriber to Sky, check it out. So that's 2 7s for SAS Red Notice. Our short shot this week is SOF versus Sci-Fi. A team of special ops soldiers are dropped into a hot zone and must contend with not only a horde of zombies, but also a well-known iconic hunter. This was a lot of fun, guys. Some of the acting, not great, especially the commanding officer at the in the control center. I thought he was a bit over the top, But
That's the point, though.
But I thought this was a lot of fun. It made me laugh out loud, you know, when he's running away from the zombies and falls over and then realises they're quite a way away because they're the slow version of the zombies. He's like, oh yeah, they're slow ones. Thought that was quite funny. So yeah, apparently there's a couple of sort of in-jokes in this one, which I wasn't familiar with. There's other sort of YouTube personalities sort of turn up, like the guy with the axe, I think, is one. Sort of another one, sort of, you know, people who've got their own sort of channels and well known in various circles, especially to do with like guns and shit, were in there. But yeah, I thought this was really well done. And you know, the guy in the suit, I think they got a really good suit. Thought that looked really, really good.
I think we can say what it is because they show it on the YouTube.
Predator. Do they? Okay, yeah, Predator. I was surprised. I was surprised when he turned up. I was like, okay, yeah. And they do a really
surprised
good
that. Yeah, I was surprised how well it looked, to be fair. Because I didn't know what to expect with this. When it started, it kind of reminded me of the... what was it called the other week? You know, the one with the robots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Robot Riot.
Oh, yeah, Robot yeah. Riot, that's that a good it. Call, yeah, yeah. Because it is a quite a similar setup, actually.
It kind of reminded me of that at first. And then the zombies turned up. I'm like, right, okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. And then it got funny. And I was like... Oh, okay. Where is this going? And then, you know, it started exploding and stuff like that. And then the Predator turns up. I'm like, right, okay.
You're my best friend. You're my best friend.
It's a pretty bit where the guy falls over and he's going, you got to get to the operating center. He goes, where? Okay, you got to get to the... Ooh, so close. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. But yeah, no, I thought they did a really good job with it. Don't know where it came from. I mean, is it Black Coffee somebody or other? Is it Rifle Black Coffee or something?
Black Rifle Coffee Company is their company. It. Yeah, it's I think it's the first. It's directed by Matt Best, who is a YouTube personality and one of the founders of the Black Rifle Coffee Company, which is why this movie is kind of put out promoting. Black Rifle Coffee. There's nothing to do with. It's not an advert or anything, but that is kind of the promotional push. You know, that's the thing they're always linked to is their coffee company. It's a veteran owned coffee company, so they're very pro gun. You know, very pro America and all that. Okay. So and I think you did a really good job, Steve. How did you get on with it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was like I said, the effects were great. I thought it was shot really well, and it's just. Batshit insane hilarious. It was really good.
Yeah.
I was really, really impressed with the Predator suit as well.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I liked all it covers a lot of ground. You don't quite know where it's gonna go. So you get the opening scene and then you've got the woman the operator sort of taking the orders and stuff, and you're thinking, oh, hang on a minute. This looks like it's kind of going to be a bit silly from that scene. And then, you know, the soldiers are introduced and they're what is it? You got the assault scene on the zombies and they're using, they like put like a landmine on a remote control car and stuff. Yeah. The shooting. And as Steve said, the visual effects are really good in it.
Yeah.
There's the whole thing about the soldier, he's puking up, and they think, oh, he's turned, they're trying to shoot him, and he's like, no, he's just trying to, he's just eating too much and stuff. And
then he starts eating his puke again. It's like, come on.
And then the Predator comes in, and they do the whole Predator thing, which I think worked a lot better than that short film Scorekeeper that we watched over on the Shots show. I mean, that was good, completely different thing, but this was, just sort of takes it in a completely different sort of direction. And I just love that whole, you know, you're my best friend, you know, hopping and skipping around with the Predator, having a little adventure and sort of playing with toys together and different things. There's a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, there's a good Wayne's World moment as well when they're sitting on the bonnet of the car.
Yeah.
Oh shit, you're an alien. That was really funny.
Yeah, really, I think he's very charismatic. Matt Best, who's the that's that guy who's also the director. He was the lead also in the, a feature film that the guy, not under the Black Rifle Coffee Company, but the same team essentially made a film called Range 15. Which is also about soldiers and zombies. It's kind of like, this is almost like a companion piece to that. It does some similar stuff. I mean, that film is a lot more outrageous. I've thought of it as like a trauma film crossed with Jackass kind of thing. It's got this real in your face, but there's loads of celebrities in it, like William Shatner and Sean Astin, and it's an entertaining watch. But I do think this, it works better, you know, this kind of 10-minute sketch kind of format, you know, the short film. Yeah. And it does end with a to be continued kind of thing. I think they want to, you know, do new adventures that tackle different genres and stuff, and they just want to throw different stuff at it. And I think they're a very creative bunch, very talented. And we've watched a lot of short films already. We're in March as we're recording this. And I think this is probably my top five as one of my favorites. It's really, really good.
So we'll put the link to this film into the footnotes. Do check it out. Check out their website as well, their YouTube channel, where they've got some other great stuff as well, including behind the scenes and
there's makeup. Look out for the one where it's like battling over a last cup of coffee scene. It's like a short action scene sort of film and whatever. That's really funny as well.
Yep, so check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Legionnaire. In Marseille's in 1925, Alain Lefebvre is an up-and-coming boxer who refuses to take a dive in a rigged fight. Angering the local crime boss, Alain must flee for his life and ends up in a recruitment center for the Foreign Legion. Shipped off to Africa, Alain makes both friends and enemies anew while fighting the local Tuareg warriors. So I think it was, you know, we were chatting before the show, Rich, and I sort of mentioned, you know, my feeling about this film when it came out. It sort of fell between the cracks, between, you know, two different camps, basically. The sort of Jean-Claude Van Damme's fans probably didn't like it because there's no martial arts in it. And your sort of mainstream audience ignored it because it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme film. I think is a sort of fair comment, really. But really what we've got here is an absolute stonking, epic sort of action drama, which, you know, with Jean-Claude in a sort of pretty decent role as Alain Lefebvre. I just think this is a really good sort of ensemble sort of action movie.
Yeah, I think they didn't know how to handle it, and it's probably a pretty much a miracle that it actually got made, because, you know, all the people interested in financing a film with Jean-Claude Van Damme would probably want the guarantee that he was going to do a lot of action in it. Yep. So they took a hell of a risk, you know, backing the film where he wasn't going to play that character. I think it's an interesting companion piece to The Quest, which funnily enough was also a period film, which was marketed much bigger, but did underperform. You know, it was not a success. So, and that had all the fight scenes. That was the opposite. You know, that was a period film with the built around martial arts. It was a period big budget version of Bloodsport, basically. And Van Damme is coming off of his two Choi Kark films, The Double Team and Knock Off. Very different kind of film for him. I think he made it after them, because Knock Off came out the same year. But it was a risk, and it kind of was a key film for him in terms of where his career was going to go. And I think it for us, you know, we look at it now, and it's a risk that paid off, because, you know, we appreciate it, we enjoy it. I liked it back then. Did you see it when it came out?
I did, yeah. And I wasn't totally sold on the first half of it, but I thoroughly loved the second half, where, you know, when they get to the fort and everything. I thought it was absolutely superb.
Steve, what have you seen this before? Have you got any?
No.
No, you first time?
No, I haven't at all. Yeah, but
how did you get on with it?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. Like you say, it is weird not seeing Van Damme throwing the kicks and the punches. You know, it's like Matt was saying, yeah, it probably would fall between the cracks because it's not your typical Van Damme film. It's not. It kind of more reminded me of like I was saying to Matt before, like an Indiana Jones type style at the beginning.
Yeah. You
know, a bit of an action romp, and then it's kind of changed into like a Full Metal Jacket, you know, type, you know, you got your training and then you're on the mission type thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is that it's not just it's, you know, the casting and, you know, him doing that. It's also, I think, a film that's very much out of time.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of film people made then, and not really kind of the film that people make now. It's a film from, it's the kind of film from a bygone era. You know, it's an old-fashioned war film.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, when I mentioned I was watching this afternoon, you said I was the perfect film to watch on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah,
it's exactly that thing. You know, that sort of slot that used to get in, you know, the old war films on a sort of BBC Two or something, or BBC One, sort of between Songs of Praise and Match of the Day kind of thing, you know. But yeah, it is that sort of, it's classic. It's timeless, really.
It is. Yeah, well, again, I agree completely, yeah.
Well, again, you've got an absolutely cracking cast as well, you know.
Yep. Yeah, Jim Carter's in there at the beginning. Who's from Downton. I know from Downton Abbey now, but I didn't know who he was at the time when I saw it.
I'm sat there watching it. I'm like, you know, the titles came up. Jim Carter? No, it can't be that Jim Carter. The next thing, bang, bang. I'm like, shit, it is. You know, it's like, and Stephen Berkoff as well.
Yeah.
That was
great. And he's excellent.
He's excellent as the sergeant in this, yeah. Also, you got Nicholas Farrell, who plays sort of key character McIntosh. He's really good in this. He kind of reminds me of Ben Cross in Undisputed 2.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this sort of flawed sort of character, you know, sort of a lot of pathos to some of the things he you know, in his background. I thought he was really good.
Yeah, I thought he's my favourite character and a favorite performance in the film. I think he's perfectly cast, and it's just a really well developed character. He's got a real interesting arc to him. He plays a pivotal part in the story and stuff. There was actually there's the Blu-ray coming out from 88 Films. It's got a couple of commentaries, one by the writer Sheldon Lettich, and another one by Dave Wayne and Matty Budrevich, who are friends of the show and quite enthusiastic about, you know, very enthusiastic about these kind of films that Van Damme's been making. Those commentaries add in a lot of interesting facts and background information. Like, for example, the film originally had a whole other part happens at the end of the story, which one reason or another, I'm not quite sure. I think Sheldon Lettich thought it might be financial, but the where the film ends is not where the film was intended to end. There was a whole part where Jean-Claude Alain Lefebvre went back to get his beloved, to get the woman he loves. And that whole arc, that whole story that, you know, Jim Carter as Galgani and everything, that was all supposed to come back. It wasn't something they just did at the beginning and think. So it's an incomplete story in that sense. And another thing is there was also an envisaged idea for a sequel, which obviously never happened. But the film's got a lot of, it's got a lot of scale, you know, the fort that appears in the movie wasn't just there. They made it. They made it out of mud brick, and it looks completely authentic. Yeah. It looks incredible.
I'm not surprised they blew the shit out of it.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking earlier about how Pharaoh's War seemed to have a lot of practical effects. I mean, that's exactly what we got here, on an epic scale as well. You know, the whole attack on the fort is massive. You know, it really does have an epic feel to it. It's really cool.
Yeah. Another thing I didn't think about until listening to the commentary was Sheldon Lettich originated the project with Van Damme, but they'd previously done another film where Van Damme played a legionnaire. Do you remember which one?
AWOL.
Yeah. AWOL. So in that film, he's leaving, and in this one, he's joining. Mm-hmm. And Lettich was pointing out, he said, in quite a few of my movies, I have the thing where a couple of guys come after him. And he said, because he did it in this one, he said, I did it in Lionheart, or whatever he called it. And it was also in Bloodsport as well. Yeah. So there's these like themes, there's these like common themes. So even though it's a very different Van Damme movie, in some ways it's quite formulaic because you got the story beats are the same. It's just not got the fighting angle. He does play a fighter. Yeah. He has a fight scene. He's a boxer.
Have a couple of fight scenes, but it is also like, you know, as you say, sort of boxing sort of style.
Yeah, and you get a butt shot as well. You don't get the splits, but you do get the butt shot.
Got the butt shot. Also, one thing that did it, the usual trope where the Italian guy pulls out the picture of his missus. He's like, here we go.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen.
You're dead.
Yeah, as soon as he started talking to him at the beginning.
Poor guy.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, you're gone.
Well, it's one of those films that's all about the camaraderie, isn't it? It's about the guys pulling together as a team, and you know, brotherhood and stuff like that.
Unfortunately, I can't pronounce his name, but the guy who plays Luther.
Oh yeah, Adewale.
Adewale. Let's even Adewale. Yeah, because I don't want to murder his name. But he's really good in it, and he has a sort of quite an iconic sort of final scene as well. Mm. You know, where you think he's bringing back good news, and it turns out no, he's not.
No,
but yeah, he was really good in this. My favorite. Did you know
Peter McDonald? Because obviously this film's got the Moroccan, you know, hordes coming to attack them and everything. He kind of did a similar, because he did Rambo 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is obviously all desert set as well. So which funnily enough, Sheldon Lettich also worked on. Mm. But the film is quite similar to that, but obviously not the big action movie that obviously Rambo 3 was. But he does get that scale. And also he apparently ghost directed The Quest as well. So he's a guy who can do epic, you know, really well. But he's not one of those directors you think of. You know, he's not like a big name. He's kind of he flies below the radar, you know what I mean? Yeah. But there's some there's definitely things you can recognize in films that he's worked on, whether, you know, in different capacities, because I think he does a lot of second unit and things. He doesn't often, he's not necessarily always the guy who's got the directed by credit.
See, that's the thing about that. This is on the that film, you know, In Search of the Last Action Hero.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was on that. Yes,
he was on that, because he's talking about Rambo 3. Because I think originally he was hired to be the second unit director, and it was Russell Mulcahy.
Yes,
who was, the actual director, but he got fired within like days of the start, and all of a sudden, you know, he gets a phone call saying, you're it. you're now taking over the project. You mentioned this trope of having like two guys sort of, you know, coming after. So in this one, he's run away to the Foreign Legion because he's upset this crime boss, because he wouldn't follow the fight against this other boxer. And because he gets his picture in the paper, you know, they figure out where he is, and they send the boxer and this other guy after him. During the fight he had at the beginning, you know, this other boxer turns around to him and goes, I was paid to take a dive the last time we fought, you know, because he beat him. And he's like really, really angry about it. And then at the end of the film, you know, it's that sort of like, you know, brotherhood, forged in battles sort of thing. You know, so even though there's that sort of animosity, he does sort of turn around and goes, yeah, I was never paid to take a dive, which I thought was, you know, a nice thing to actually admit to, you know, sort of out of a sign of respect. So yeah, that line was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, the whole film's got lots of really good moments. The script is really good. It's beautifully shot. It's the perfect, you know, it's one of those, I think Al Murray did a book called War Films I Watched With My Dad. And this is the kind of film you would imagine. This is the kind of film you would sit down and watch with your dad, kind of thing. It's a Sunday afternoon, you know, Bridge Over the River Kwai is, you know, kind of all any film from that era.
It has got a sort of David Lean sort of epic scope to it.
Have you ever seen March or Die?
Yeah,
you have. So how does that compare?
Yeah, it does, and you know, and the other stuff like, you know, Bogest and Carry On, Follow That Camel. You know, all that sort of stuff. It fits that sort of, you know, that trope for sure. You know, I'm pretty sure there's other ones. I can't remember them.
Yeah, it's not particular. You know, the Foreign Legion, it hasn't been, it's not covered a lot by movies. I think, like you say, there's been a handful. But that's another thing that sort of adds an interesting dimension to this, is that it's not your typical World War II, you know, kind of thing. It's a very different thing.
Yeah.
And the Foreign Legion is quite an interesting subject, and it engages, because you think, oh, so this is a different, it's a very different kind of setup to a war film. But at the same time, it's got all those familiar, you know, conventions and that, you know, keep you engaged and interested while, you know, so it's kind of a comfortable viewing experience, you know, even though it's doing things that are different while at the same time doing things very much the same, which is, you know, kind of the crux of Jean-Claude Van Damme's involvement. You know, he's doing it's something you're very familiar with, but you're seeing something quite different. And Van Damme did this, and then he did another film called Inferno or Desert Heat afterwards, I think. And they both came out around the same time, which was him also doing more of a dramatic role. That's kind of got some black, weird comedy and stuff. That's a very different movie in its own right. But I think when Van Damme would return to, you know, this sort of less action heavy performances, you know, it took a long time, didn't it, you know, because of how these films weren't really received that well. But I think now we can go back and there's a chance for people to reappraise them. You know, he's been acknowledged for his performances in things like JCVD.
JCVD was absolutely cracking performance, great film, man.
And so I think people who've maybe discounted him at the time, you know, there's a chance for this film to be rediscovered, not only on the 88 Films Blu-ray, but also on Prime.
Yep, and it's a very good widescreen transfer on there as well. So even if you don't pick up on disc, you know, you've got no excuse for not watching this, because it's sitting there right on Prime. And that's the end of this week's show. So thank you for Rich and Steve for joining me to talk about all these wonderful action movies.
It was awesome.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
Really good stuff. Yeah, check out the trailers and the short shot in the footnotes. Speaking of short shots, don't forget to check out our new podcast, the DTV Digest Short Shots, where Rich and I look exclusively at a bunch of short films in each episode. Also, check out our Facebook and Twitter pages, where you will find the DTV chart and news about other coming releases. So thank you for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.